Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. My name is Rachel and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Rachel.
We'll start our meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. The Preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Welcome to our meeting this morning. We have members of our fellowship in, and they'll be sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey in recovery from alcoholism. And to start the sharing off, we have Alex.
Thanks, Rachel. I'm Alex. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Alex.
Hey there. So it's a lovely Saturday morning, and I'm glad to be awake, and I woke up at 7 this morning. It's a big contrast from when I was first drinking, was a hangover, vomiting, feeling lousy about the world. Not every day is bright and crisp, but things are a heck of a lot. I am a different person. My story is that I escaped New Zealand, escaped a family situation in a school. I went to a single-sex rugby school and I felt sort of bullied and pushed around and felt I had to be a success at life. And my father was quite a driver. My mother was quite passive. And as it turned out, my mother remarried a heavy drinker who was also quite a rager and sort of a driver and so I just escaped New Zealand, went off overseas. I thought OE would do it, but actually I needed alcohol as well, and I've discovered other things too. And they actually helped to, give me a bit of an escape route. And it really, I believe it saved my life, alcohol, because it helped me to anaesthetize the kind of pain I was feeling from a dysfunctional family. But what actually happened is the creditor became a predator. Alcohol actually started to take my life away as opposed to giving me life, and it was actually accentuating the issues I already had. And luckily, I don't know if I said it before, but my bridge story is I ended up under a bridge. I scratched myself in a motorcycle taxi accident. I was living overseas in Bangkok. And it's quite amazing how the whole circular intersection stopped. All the traffic stopped. You know, a major intersection in Bangkok, and all the traffic stopped for this foreigner who'd come off his motorcycle taxi. And I thought, wow, that's incredible. That's like a God move. So I already believed in a God, but I went off to a pub to tell the story with a sort of a bit of a grazed, bloody arm. And I thought it was a great war story. And that night I was in, did things that sort of, it was exposing myself to more threat than just traffic injury. I was sort of getting into arguments with people, and that was a typical sort of a bender for me, was to get out there and try to control the world and be a bit of a director and tell people what they should be doing. And it was just crazy. And I ended up under a bridge. I was in a bar and I sort of got scared by someone whispering something in my ear, and I just, totally crazy. I think I'd proposed marriage to someone. quite funny, really. The name of the bar was Voodoo. Stay away from that bar. So, I ran out of that bar and someone was chasing me. Then I blacked out and then I ended up under a bridge in a tin shack. And I thought, oh, this is kind of cool. I'm going to be slaughtered for this. But I had my arm around someone. I thought, oh, this is really cool. It's a woman there. And I saw when I woke up, she had hardly any teeth, and her friend came in and she was waving a needle and said, do you want any more? And I just started to freak inside, and I sort of got up to go, and they gave me my keys and my wallet back, and I ended up at the Citizens Advice Bureau, which is luckily had an American trained alcohol and drug counsellor there, just by chance, because Bangkok in those days. Yeah, but she said, do you drink much? And I said, oh, yeah, of course. You would too if you had my problems. And she said, I think you're an alcoholic. Go to a meeting. There's a meeting just down the road. You should have just enough time to get there. She had said with a big smile on her face. It was 2 hours later. And I just stumbled down the road. And there was a guy there, a Swedish guy, who looked at me and he said, we've been waiting for you at the door, and with a really friendly smile. I thought, oh, that's nice. They've been waiting for me. I didn't get paranoid at all. Normally I was paranoid about everything and everyone. But, you know, I went to this meeting and straight away I felt at home. There was an engineer I didn't know from a bar of soap from Los Angeles, and he was talking about how he'd almost killed his family, or a family, by driving into someone's backyard under the influence. And straight away, I called him RoboSponsor. He came up to me after the meeting, gave me his card and said, call me every day. I didn't even ask him to be my sponsor, but it really worked because I needed that sort of firm direction. And then I just kept going and going and going, and I became a bit of a, what we call a bleeding deacon. I sort of became all righteous and did lots of service, and I was wheeling the coffee trolley into the meetings, and I was actually what they called a dry drunk, so I was actually still full of anger and rage, but at least I wasn't drinking. But I did actually go out and drink again because of that rage. And what happened then is I got scared the second time I drank, and I just... Actually, that was actually in another country, but it was just one little bottle of alcohol, ginger ale called Alex on it. And I tried to justify it wasn't a drink, but it actually was. It had 3% alcohol in it. And it was enough to make me really scared about where was my life going, what was I becoming, what were my dreams becoming. I had dreams of being all sorts of things. And it was enough to drive me back into AA, and ever since then I've felt part of AA because of that fear and desperation. However, having said that, AA has given me a platform to actually investigate what were the drivers that made me go out and escape and drink and self-destruct. And with some alcoholics, they can just stop drinking, do the program, and have a happy life. For me, I have to look at how can I become sober in terms of my relationships and my value with money and self-care and the whole nine yards. And one guy who was 10 years sober, I sort of worshipped him because he was 10 years sober, he said, set your timer and tidy up for 15 minutes, because I had a terrible problem with mess and it really helped me. I do it with money management now. I just set my timer for 15 minutes. Very, very grateful for the small little tidbits that we're given in AA. Things, you see them in little aphorisms on the wall, you know, one day at a time and all the rest of it. But without that, reading the big book, it says we can seek outside help. I've had to actually, for my sobriety, is to narrow my road. In other words, get rid of the activities that weren't helping my sobriety, but also seek help with issues that not every alcoholic had to deal with. And I'll tell you what, my sobriety, I believe, has never been better, because I've actually had to look at toxic parenting and hypervigilance, which is not a term used in AA, but it's something that I've had to learn about, is the inability to relax around people. Because in the big book it says we absolutely insist on enjoying ourselves, on enjoying life. And part of that is to actually find out what's getting in my way, what's actually a bottle of alcohol for me, and that has been people. And I've had a lot of success in dealing with that. So I'm very, very grateful for the program, that it's given me a platform to just one day at a time investigate further. Yeah, and that's about it for me. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in this morning, and they're sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And the next person to share is Melissa.
Hi, my name's Melissa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Melissa.
Hi, Melissa. I'm very grateful to have found AA. I was raised out west with some good middle-class family, all the opportunities, nice school, all that stuff. Like a lot of families, there was disharmony at times, but nothing distinct that should have sent me down a path of feeling as ill to fit in with people and uncomfortable in my own skin is what I felt. I was always a teacher's pet and did well at school, but for some reason by the time I got to 13 and 14, I wanted to change schools and find a way to skip a lot of levels and get out of what everybody else had to do. I managed to get myself out of PE. I managed to skip over fourth form. And then another part of me decided that I didn't want to be good and do well at school anymore. I wanted to be work out what it was like to be bad and wag and go away from what was needed to be done. So I started to try and live this sort of double life of being fitting in and doing well, and also working out how to get away from myself and get away from life. So I found cigarettes and I found dope, but then I found alcohol, and that was a true release for me. It just let all the fears go, and it brought in this huge level of excitement and huge level of lack of responsibility. I was able to just stop worrying about what people thought and just take action and not care about the outcome of situations. So this was pretty exciting, and I did this on the weekends, and I'd found people that were going to parties and found it wrapped up with music pretty well, so that was good, and found it introduced me to a whole lot of people I didn't know how to talk to. So off I went down this track and then proceeded to get into the progression of really needing alcohol. So I went from discovering it and enjoying it to needing it. So I needed to hang out with people who used it. And I needed to make sure I put it ahead of other things. I didn't realise any of this until I got clean. None of this made sense. But looking back in hindsight, I can see that the best thing about going to university was finding shadows, and the bar there was good to hang out in. No one cared if you didn't go to class. It didn't really occur to me that not completing university for a couple of years would leave me with, oh, probably, I don't know, 20 or 30 grand worth of debt that grew pretty quickly. And then I left that and went and worked and found different jobs. I never lasted at them more than a year or two. I always burnt out opportunities. And I would think it was because of the location or the type of the job or the people I worked with, but I just had no stamina to stick with anything because my own behaviours of not showing up on a Monday or a Friday or doing a half-pie job came about, and they were visible, and so I would get myself out of it. I couldn't sustain friendships. I went away from a lot of the wonderful women that I hung out with from primary school and high school by my early 20s. I just couldn't show up when they invited me to things, and I'd go out to town with them when I did, and somehow I just couldn't hang around and speak to them. I'd just go off and talk to men and other people, and gosh knows where I'd go and what time I'd come home and what was up. And yeah, by my late 20s, I was the person that was ringing my mum and dad to help me pay for my phone bills and get me out of trouble, and I could never insure in my car. I could just never get on and do the practical stuff that everybody else did. And the idea of going home in the evenings freaked me out. The idea of living a normal, quiet life just made me shake in my boots. I couldn't sit with myself. I couldn't cope with my own company. And thankfully, alcoholism is a progressive disease, and it took away more and more from me. And so I lost opportunities. I could no longer scrub myself up clean and talk the talk to get myself into another job. I could no longer pull off the manipulation that I had going on with friends and family around me. I quietly whittled my life down to friends that I'd only met months ago. Often they were much younger than me because socially we were on the same path, because I couldn't sit down and talk with people of my own age in the early 30s because they were getting on and living a life, and it was Monday to Friday and they were at work, and I'd have to face myself if I spent time with them. So thankfully my life got to a really desperate place where I got incredibly lonely, and it dawned on me that I'd given away enough morals. I'd scared myself enough that I had no flat. I was living in a pull-out couch out the back of somebody's garage. I had no sensible long-term friendships. I had no great contact with my family. My father had to say to me, I don't know what to say to you anymore. I think I'm going to have to disown you, so that he could get the message through to me. And thankfully, all this came to pass that eventually I spiritually broke in my head and realised, I am lonely. I can't do this. And I went along to a rehab and said, can I join in here? I need to be taken out of circulation. I need a hand. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what to do. And they said, you better cut up your SIM card so you're not in contact with all the people that are difficult in your life. And you better go to 5 meetings a week. And I didn't know what they were talking about. So they gave me a list. And off I went to my first AA meeting. I went to the one the next day that was closest to my house. And there were all these people sitting around calmly, laughing, smiling, talking to each other. And they could talk about their feelings. People, I couldn't work out who was running the meeting, what was going on, how it was run. But I could see that they all were comfortable there and they knew what they were doing. And they could talk about all these thoughts and feelings in their head that I had been way too scared to think about, let alone put voice to. And somebody said, you can leave here and need never drink again. I thought, that's a pretty bold promise. And I was shaking and I was crying and I overshared and I told them way too many drastic things about myself. But it felt good to get some stuff out and leave it on the carpet there. And nobody looked overwhelmed, nobody looked shocked, nobody tried to reach in and fix my life up for me. But they did tell me that keep coming back, and they all made sure they came up and shook my hand and knew my name. And so I returned to meetings because it was the only way to get in a rehab, and slowly but surely it became apparent that people wanted nothing from me but for me to get well, and they smiled and the woman hugged me. I really needed hugs. I needed physical contact and platonic safe love, and they remembered my name every time, and it was very nice to be welcome and wanted because I had burned every bridge and I wasn't welcome many places. So after a few months in treatment where I learned to wash myself and do my laundry and look after myself better, I came out, and my sponsor, who had quietly waited for me to come out, started to take me through the steps, and I had a chance to gain a whole lot. I had a chance to see myself how everybody else could see me, to see the truth and clear the wreckage and face who I was and find out that there's some good things about me too. And so I was able to face the darkness, so I didn't have that spinning pit of despair inside me anymore. And I was able to look forward to a much better life. And very slowly and very surely, traumatically and gently all at the same time, growing up in the rooms of AA, I've been loved back to wellness. People have helped me feel okay at being 14 emotionally inside in a 34-year-old's body. And now that I'm up to about 40 now, I'm starting to feel like a 40-year-old over the years of just going to AA meetings and what was an absolute noose around my neck, thinking I'm an alcoholic, I'll have to go to meetings for the rest of my life, has now become a lifeline. And the friendships I have now, they're healthy and they're real, and I'm learning to be a friend. And AA is a beautiful thing. And I really wish for, if it's something that you need in your life, that you find half the peace that I've found there. Thanks for listening.
Awesome. Thanks, Melissa. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in this morning, and they're sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And the last person to share this morning is Kendall.
Hi, my name's Kendall and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kendall.
And I've really heard what I needed to hear today. Going from the creditor turning to the predator. That was awesome. I hadn't come across that before, but I decided in the first year that even if I only get 10% from a meeting, then that's 10% more than if I hadn't gone at all. So I've always needed to turn up and hear the similarities instead of, you know, just looking for the differences and reasons not to turn up to life, not to be a part of. So the differences of being able to come into the rooms and hear my story, relate to other people and start to be a part of, has really been a process that I've gone through over the years. It's what I've heard, similar to like peeling back the layers of an onion skin, that I never know, you know, how much more growth there is to be done, because, you know, this process is in the seeking, not the finding. And I've really needed to, you know, keep coming back to the foundation, remain teachable, carry on learning, and know that, you know, I don't know everything. I definitely didn't know, you know, a lot when I first came in, let alone know much about myself. So, yeah, needing to remain teachable. And I'd done a lot of experimentation before coming into the rooms, doing it my way, thinking, you know, just surviving on my will, thinking that I was becoming a man while I was working towards just coping in life, just getting up and just doing what I needed to be done. But, you know, a lot of those ways that I was cutting corners and flying under the radar and not taking responsibility weren't helping me grow. And it wasn't until, you know, those destructive cycles were getting closer together, was that, you know, the consequences started to build up and I would hit a rock bottom in one level and then I would move on to the next and then just think, okay, I'll just do it just slightly different, or I'll just do it this way, or I'll just cut this out. And I remember a lot of the consequences with my drinking was having a lot of hangovers, and instead of cutting out the alcohol, I was like, okay, well, I'll just not drink this thing, or I'll just drink on these days, or I'll just, you know, start at different times and stuff like that, and then just trying to have the, you know, drink of water at like 5 o'clock in the morning before having to get up at 7 or 8. And then there was one time that I'd always wanted to try and get to sleep or get to bed before the birds came up. And looking back now, I realised that there was one time wherein I had drunk myself sober. And these are experiments that I'd gone through and recognised, you know, the crazy and insanity things and activities that I was trying to perform just to control it. And when I heard Alex say, you know, it was the creditor turning into the predator, just reminded me of when I used to, you know, turn to the culprit to solve the problem. I didn't realise that I kept on going back to the one thing that it was at, which was actually, you know, taking my life down. So I needed to come into the rooms and find something opposite, something more positive. I came in quite quiet in a sense because I'd been all talk in the past. I'd always been all loud and proud, and I would talk about, you know, what I wanted you to hear, but I wouldn't share about the things that I didn't, you know, want to expose to other people. So I had an office job, and I thought that as long as I wore a shirt with a collar and I looked all right on the outside, that no one would question what was going on inside. But there was, you know, a lot of cuts on my chest and scars on my arms and other things that were just turmoil, that was just a part of me that was screaming out for help. But I'd always struggled with communicating. I didn't know how to communicate what was going on, so I just thought I just got to keep on coping, keep on thinking that I was putting my best foot forward just to deal with things on my own, because that's what men do. And it wasn't until I got into rehab that someone had suggested that, you know, that life isn't for coping, life is for living. And there was a lot of things that just sort of blew me away, and it was like that penny drop moment. And some of those penny drop moments became teardrop moments that just really meant a lot to me, because I'd always struggled with getting in touch with my emotions, and it just had felt so freeing that I needed to be able to let some stuff out. And it was like an iceberg thawing out, and I still didn't cry a lot when I'd gone to treatment or came into the rooms, but I don't shy away from that if the opportunity comes up now. So I'm really grateful for being able to come in and be of service and take advantage of the opportunity to be able to share at any meeting. Hopefully ignoring whatever the weather's like on the outside, hopefully the sun is shining on the inside for yourself, because I really need to focus on the positive things. I really need to change, you know, my outlook on life. And through that, I needed to get a program, and that's what I've been able to listen and learn from since coming into the rooms. When I'd gone into treatment, someone had asked me a question, which was more like a qualifying question, just to see where I was at in life. And they had said, are there many things in your life that you want to happen that keep not happening? And are there many things in your life that you don't want to happen that keep happening? And I could really relate to that, because I'd always tried to do it my way, not taking responsibility. And it wasn't until I came into these rooms that I really needed to, you know, see what other people were doing that were turning their lives around. I'd heard that this is, it's not a stop drinking program, it's a life-changing program. And I needed to change my thinking so that I could have a more fulfilling life. And I'd recognised in the early days that I can't think my way into good living. I got to live my way into good thinking. and there was other ways that that had been promoted. And I've liked to hear the same thing from different angles and attack the point from, you know, different ways. But all in all, it starts to build that foundation of how I can have, you know, a better life. I had to quit doing the things I didn't like for myself for and start doing the things that I do like myself for. And that can be a day-to-day basis, and it's a lot easier to come back to doing things just for the day, you know, not worrying about the past, not future tripping and worrying, getting that anxiety. And I still get a lot of anxiety every now and again. So it was such a learning curve for a attention-seeking class clown like me that had always been put forward in opportunities and situations, always had people say, oh, Kendra would do it and stuff like that. And everyone thought that I was an extrovert. But it wasn't until I came into the rooms that I learned about anxiety and why I had trouble breathing and why I couldn't, you know, cope in situations. And I'd always distract the situation. Like, I was always like, don't put me in the limelight. Like, I choose when I get put in the limelight because I want to promote something that I'm good at, but I don't want people to find out what I'm not good at. And that was all about me not feeling complete as a person. I never felt enough. I was always doing, you know, too much of the negative things and distracting me and, you know, running away from responsibility, running away from things that would help me grow. So when the opportunity came up for me to, yeah, share at a meeting, I have to go through that anxiety. I have to recognize that AA is bigger than me. AA is bigger than my feelings. I learned from my sponsor in the early years, you know, that if I don't grow, then I disintegrate. So I need to keep finding those opportunities for me to grow day by day. And, you know, sometimes I can narrow it down to a half day, just got to get through this, or even break it down to the hours, just recognizing that, you know, feelings are like buses and that, you know, there's going to be another one coming around the corner. And I also heard that, yeah, the feelings and drama can be like buses. I don't have to get on every single one. And that was something that really rung true for me, recognizing that when, you know, drama or when, you know, feelings come up, I don't have to pay it that much attention. I can just sit and be. And that was something else that I'd learned in treatment, that I needed to listen and learn from other people. That I'm not a human doing, just doing that, doing this, and then I'm actually just a human being that, every now and again, it's been so important for me to pause in life, take a deep breath, and just do the next right thing. Just put my best foot forward, try to be the best version of myself, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm treating life like a loose-fitting garment, and I can just fall into my skin. And so it's about, you know, feeling a part of and not feeling apart from. And that's the difference of coming to these rooms and getting to know myself so that I can be there for other people. And I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Kendall. That brings us towards the end of our meeting. If you've been listening and identified with our speakers and you'd like to do something about your drinking, you can log on to aa.org.nz, and in the drop-down box under meetings lists, there's a list of all meetings in the Greater Auckland area and right throughout the country. You can also phone 0800 AA Works, and this will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. We'll be back here next Sunday at 10:45 on 104.6 Planet FM with Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. And we'll close our meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.